Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Hackers and HackZen podcast. You're about to join Erica, Jax, and John for an inclusive cybersecurity conversation designed to educate and break the stereotypes of cybersecurity professionals while providing life hacks on how to handle burnout, networking, and goal setting. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome back, Hackers and HackZen fam. We are so excited to have one of our good friends back on the show today, Mr. George Tang. For those of you who have been tuning in with us for a while, you already know that George is a force in the cybersecurity space. He's a cloud guru, a tech aficionado, a cert expert, just overall really hungry for growth and knowledge. George, thanks for coming back on today to talk about a really important topic that's affected most of us since 2020. This is how work and our lifestyles have been impacted by the global pandemic. So to kick off this conversation today, George, really want to dig into what your adjustment to work life looked like when the pandemic hit, how that evolved throughout, you know, the last year or so, and then to kind of piggyback on what were the hardest things to adjust to?
Yeah, thanks for having me back, by the way. Great to be back. I think this is third time.
Yes.
So anyways, a topic near and dear, I'm sure, to pretty much all of our hearts. I imagine if we have a white collar, paper pushing computer desk job, you know, this is widely applicable. But my adjustment, so my background's in consulting. You know, Eric and I worked together at Coalfire before my most recent gig. And so we'd be traveling a lot for client engagements. When we weren't traveling, though, we didn't have to go into the office. I mean, I went to the office because I loved it and I lived close by, but I was already like had a really flexible and pretty flexible work schedule. So the transition to being at home all the time once COVID hit wasn't that crazy from like a macro level. What was really hard for me personally was I live in a one bedroom with my fiance, a one bedroom condo that's like 600 square feet. So we weren't literally on top of each other, but about as close as we could have been. And she's a recruiter. So she's on calls all day with candidates. I'm in technical sales, so I'm on sales calls all day. That really, you know, work aside, that really tested co-living, cohabitating, being in pretty much one room 24/7. That was probably the biggest challenge that I ran into.
One of the things that you said, I'm like over here, yes, 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 was the sharing the space. As soon as we kicked off with COVID and all the lockdowns started right around March, I think was when it started hitting Virginia. One of my friends came from New York and got a job around DC area, and she moved in with me for a couple of weeks, and she had an executive role at the organization she was with. And I have, like you said, a small apartment. It was a two bedroom though. And so my mindset, my office is in the living room, and I figured she could have the guest room. And I just remember we both talk really, really loud. And there would be times, even with the door shut, I would have to move to my bedroom. She would be in her bedroom. And it just, even though you just love each other, there was just this frustration I felt, because you don't really have the privacy and it's just a new environment. And I could really see not only from my end, but my coworkers that I was working with, everybody were having these unique challenges and trying to find their new balance. And one thing I've seen is we've all kind of adjusted to a new normal. You know, we've figured out how to work in co-working spaces or work from home or find a hybrid work life. And I'm just curious, from what you've experienced going through COVID and where you're at right now, did you see any challenges outside of the one that you just mentioned, but did you see any other additional challenges with moving from that face-to-face to that virtual interaction? And if you did, can you provide any tips and tricks on how you circumvented that and got around that to kind of make you a better, stronger communicator on the virtual side?
Oh, 100%, right? Like, again, I was kind of in a slightly different position because Eric and I were in consulting, so we frequently worked with customers and colleagues in other offices pre-COVID. Once COVID hit, that all ceased, right? The any ability to see colleagues in the office, and then I jumped jobs, right? So I'm the job I'm at now. They're based in North Carolina, so I'm permanently remote. So this resonates a lot with me. Challenges for sure, right? I feel like if you have a job where you don't need to collaborate with colleagues and you have all the information you need, where you're in control of your destiny by yourself, like COVID must have probably been awesome. Like if you crush your work, you can, find time to do other stuff. But a lot of us, especially as we get more responsibility within the companies and teams we're at, we need to collaborate frequently, right? And so COVID made that really hard for me. I'm used to going to the office, poking my head in, giving someone the look while they're on a call, and they know that later on I'm just going to sync with them for like 9 minutes to get an answer so I can unblock myself. COVID has been super duper hard. I mean, everyone's calendars are just blocked off on tons of calls because everybody wants to get FaceTime, right? The only thing that I've found that's been even remotely effective is just to over communicate, whether it's Slack or some instant messaging thing or email, just more proactive communication, which, this actually makes something else a little bit worse, which is like the fatigue from like the alerts from like the Slacks and the emails. But hey, like to me, it's like the alternative is to under communicate or do what I'm used to and probably not get my stuff done properly and then have to explain why things weren't done. Or what I just the alternative I just laid out, which is yeah, you might be sending a few extra pings, you might be waving your hand a little bit earlier than you would pre-COVID, but people, you have to. People just are really busy, and other people are doing the same thing to them. So, I guess this what is it? The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Is that right? Something like that. Anyways, it hasn't been perfect, but that's kind of what I've been trying to figure out and use to better the communication challenges.
What I want to ask you, go back to something that you said that is very interesting, especially when you're in an office space, is you can go over to your office mate and you can kind of give them a look and they know, hey, I need to get offline with you for a quick meeting. I'm curious, how have you approached that now that we're in a very virtual world? Is it a quick Slack? Hey, do you have a couple of minutes? How have you worked through that? Because I know me personally, I want to have quicker meetings, but I feel like since we are virtual, even those quick meetings always turn into 15 to 20 minutes. So I'm just curious how you've created that environment and been able to do those micro meetings in a way.
Ooh, that's tough. Yeah, it's funny. Every time it's like, hey, do you have a second or do you have a minute? And it's never like one of those, like a second or a minute. It's usually like 11 minutes or 30 minutes. Ooh, that's tough. One thing that I've done and do this judicious or use your judgment with COVID, and I'm in a kind of like a weird remote setting. I try to limit my DMs, which sounds kind of weird. I try to use public channels as much as possible. It's self-serving, and I think it's beneficial for organizations in COVID. It's self-serving because like it makes other people aware of what I'm doing. So like if I need more support, people have seen me, they're more aware. I've socialized the idea of what I'm working on. They might be more willing to help me, right? The second benefit I think is less self-serving is as companies have a hard time having face-to-face interaction, that knowledge sharing that used to happen naturally through osmosis in the office, it's not there anymore. So people always want to use DMs because I think people are afraid of coming off like they don't know something or they just, there's risk to being public with your conversations. But I think if people can get over that fear a little bit, there's a lot to be gained holistically across the company with a lot more knowledge sharing. So that's what I've been trying to do. To just make people aware of what I got going on and hopefully also try to educate colleagues along the way.
George, it's funny that you say that because I feel like I've also transitioned more into doing that, into posting in public channels. And I literally use the word update and then just immediately just like whatever happened, whatever the communication was, whether I updated something, whether I did a quality review, whatever that may be, instead of like pinging the individuals that would have been my direct message to the actual project team members. I'll do it on the channel. That way anyone can go back at any time and search for it, because I've realized that with this, and you brought this up, George, all this over communication, it's good. And I've definitely taken that approach too, but I've also noticed that there is that fatigue that comes with meetings, and that is less avoidable, especially when you are in a client facing role, than the internal communication. So something that I've really had to implement during this time personally is just the concept of, should this be a meeting or should this be an email? What is the right format for communicating what needs to happen? So if this is a collaborative discussion, if I need information that I think we need to talk through, for example, if, you know, a good example of this would be a director leaves the company, perhaps there's some accounts that need, transitioning, we need to do some knowledge transfer. That's something that may be quicker to do on a call, right? But if there is specific data that I need, for example, I can put together bullets of, I need this, 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 and this. Can you please go search that and give it back to me? That is easier. This is an easier transaction via Slack or email than a call, because I can go and search that data. I would have had to stay on the phone for at least 15 to 30 minutes, maybe having, a mix of small talk, which obviously I would love to build rapport with my internal stakeholders and everybody that I work with, of course, especially my sales counterparts and such. But I realized that that was causing just insane meeting fatigue. I was finding it really hard to find those time blocks of, actual admin work or billable work that I needed to get done. And George, I'm sure you can relate to that. So that really leads me to my next question. As somebody who also just is in a lot of meetings, how are you personally battling meeting exhaustion? What are some of the things that you're doing to make sure that you're kind of counterbalancing that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I want to one more comment on the last thought. It was when you tag or call out colleagues in public channels, it's a double-edged sword. Like, it'll light a fire under their ass and you'll probably get a response faster, but be judicious about how frequently you use it, right? Yes. So how do I battle meeting exhaustion? So I support like all of our salespeople. So I get pulled into all of their calls when needed. And given my, in a given week, like depending on my other non-sales call workload, like it can get really hectic for me. So how I battle the meeting exhaustion is I actually block off time on my calendar where meetings aren't allowed to be scheduled. That's time for me to catch up and do non-customer meeting work, because I actually have other projects as well. And I'll just block off like 2 hours every morning, actually. I'm a morning person. My most like highest cognitive output is in the mornings. I'll try to crush individual work in those blocks. And then if I find myself just like, if I see my schedule for the next day, doesn't even give me like 15 or 30 minutes to eat or go to the bathroom, like, I'll try to find somewhere to block off a few minutes just for me to catch up and kind of gather myself. But yeah, I mean, Zoom meetings are really effective compared to like the alternative of like in-person sales meetings for me. It does get pretty hectic after a while.
So something that I want to kind of piggyback on that is just, I've noticed that the exhaustion also increases when there's video. And it's kind of a, I personally can't decide so which is better. So I will give you, I will definitely ask your input on this part, but my personal experience lately has been, it's more effective to have the video call, especially in an internal setting. A lot of times too, because some of these clients that don't necessarily have rapport with us, that haven't worked with us year to year, they're not used to seeing my face. They don't see the interaction. And a lot of times they're more responsive from that face to face, even if it's virtual. But I have noticed that it
does exhaust me more because I have to be conscious of my expressions. I am a very expressive person. I talk with my hands, you know, all of that. So I noticed that that versus just being on the phone is so much more exhausting. Do you, what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree, disagree? What's your input?
Yeah. I agree. The video is more, I always try to turn my video on even if they don't have it turned on, but yeah, I have to be more mindful of like, you know, what's my facial expression? Do I look grumpy when I'm talking or when I'm listening? Even if I don't feel that way, I got to make sure, you know, be super self-aware. And yeah, that takes extra cognitive bandwidth. So yeah, fully agree. But I think that, especially in my perspective, right? Like trying to sell, like it's about trust and relationships. Like the video is it's a no-brainer for me. It's worth it for me to turn it on and spend a little extra energy to make it a little bit more intimate.
I try to turn on my video during specific meetings, such as one-on-ones. I don't have a lot of client facing, but when I do, I always turn it on. But the videos, being in the cyber world, a lot of us are super introverted. A lot of, like meeting with engineers, meeting with some of the other tech guys, we just keep all our videos off majority of the time. But I am very conscious when I do my one-on-ones with my employees or it's something externally facing, I think it's extremely important to have those videos on because we don't have that connection like you would in the physical presence of them. And it makes it just a little bit more intimate. But I'm with Erica. I do get more exhausted. I'm always like making sure I'm fully presentable because yeah, like you said, George, you don't want to sit there and be all grumpy and exhausted and tired because you know what you're the perception that you're giving off. I want to go back to something that you said, though, about time blocking. I love time blocking. That's Eric and I actually did an episode on time blocking because it's critical. When I work with my employees, when I take over any section, that's almost always one of the first things that I talk to them about is taking back their time, doing time blocking, not just setting time aside for us to have breaks. Because when you get into leadership, that's why a lot of times why we do time blocking. But I feel like sometimes the younger employees, they need to learn how to time block their time, such as research time and then study time and things like that, because they're not going to have as many meetings as we would being in leadership roles. So we're really in this new era, you know, the new electronic era. We've all moved, or a lot of us have moved to a work from home and a Zoom environment. And I'm just curious, because I know for me, it has been extremely hard to have that separation because now I work from home and I'm always on my computer and my laptop. I have a one bedroom condo, so it's right there in my living room. And it has been something that I've had to figure out is how do I disconnect? How do I step away from that machine and have that separation in my day because I'm not getting in my car and physically driving to the office? So I'm really curious, what have you done that has helped you have that separation when your day is over, it is over and work's done for you?
Oof, I'm probably not the best guy, but I'll tell you things that I'm working on that I'm not doing perfectly, right? When I actually am on the weekends and on vacations and stuff, well, actually this is more applicable for vacations. I'm going to practice deleting Slack and email off my phone, just like period. The reason why is because like on nights and evenings, I struggle a lot with not checking my phone. Like I'll open up Slack compulsively as if I had some sort of weird habit or drug addiction or something like that. I just can't not, like instinctively, I won't even notice it. When I pick up my phone, I use the Face ID to unlock it. My finger just taps either email or Slack. And I was like, wait a minute. There's nothing on my mind that I wanted to check. Why am I doing this? So that's something I've been trying really hard to work on. And then also like the idea that, yeah, like I live in literally one room. It's my office. It's my bedroom. It's everything. So it's really easy to just like, oh, did someone message me or did a new email come in? Being conscious and reminding myself that, hey, there are certain things that, yeah, they're fires and you should prioritize them. And hopefully, you know, you got that stuff done. But when you're, you know, at the end of the day, there's always going to be more work. And if you leave it until the morning, it's probably going to be okay. The similar idea is like, if you go to vacation and you see emails come in, try it out. Like, don't respond when you usually would. And a few days later, or a couple weeks later, when you come back from vacation, probably guaranteed that your company hasn't like, you know, collapsed because you know, didn't respond. Those are the types of exercises and reminders I try to use myself just because I'm awful. I started out being really awful at separating work and life. I'd love to hear if any other mechanisms have been super effective for either of you. So.
Eric and I have actually talked about this, the stopping work at a certain time and then just being okay that there's work's just going to have to get done tomorrow and the earth isn't going to collapse in. For me, it was deciding what is time sensitive. And there have been days where I knew I was not going to get everything done and I had to be okay with it. And what helps and works for me is deciding what those tasks are that I need to accomplish and what are the most time sensitive, and then prioritizing in that way to know if I get these three done, I'm good because these are the ones that are the most critical and the other five can wait till the next day. At least that's what I do. And that's typically what works for me. And then there are those days that I work late. I'll work, 8 or 9 o'clock, but I always stop if it's a late day or late evening, I stop at 9 o'clock and I make sure that I don't work till 10 or 11. At least there are times that that will happen, but I can't keep doing that. That's at least my cutoff. Erica, what about you?
So I am very similarly wired to George as in the sense of I am a morning person. 5 a.m. rolls around, my brain is sharp and ready to go. I know you're listening to this probably thinking, whoa, whatever's in her coffee. No, I don't even drink coffee. I am just a very energetic morning person. I wake up really, really ready to like seize the day. And so when it comes to my most productive work hours, I get that bulk done in that first few hours of the day. Then of course, a lot of people start logging in. I start to have more of those meetings and interactions. And so when I start to feel more of that fatigue and the challenges are really towards the end of the day. And I know George, Jack, you guys know that from, corresponding with me, you'll even notice a change in my voice. I mean, the exhaustion is there. And so I think accountability is something that's really, really nice to have. So whether it be, a teammate, a friend, I know that sometimes I'll send Jax a message and, I'm calling her out for being online and working late and just saying, is it absolutely necessary? Can I wait for tomorrow? And she does the same for me. It's like, she's like, log off, sis, go and get some rest. And so I think it's really important to have those people in your life that will tell you, because as the three of us here are very highly productive individuals and we like to get things done. We don't like those things hanging in the back of our heads, just thinking about the tasks we have to do. And it's easier said than done that you can roll them to tomorrow. I'm here showing my to-do list. And I mean, I've already started to take what isn't a must do for today and started tomorrow's list, because I already know that realistically looking at the clock, I am probably not going to get to that lower hanging fruit like today. And that's okay. But I'm starting to make those decisions right now rather than waiting till later to close a business where I feel like I have all of these tasks that didn't get completed. So I think Jax, your point about prioritization is like absolutely key. Another really interesting tip that I am trying to implement that I found on LinkedIn. I can't remember who posted it, but it was something about just unplugging your computer from the charger. So when you get to a point in your day where your brain is just, starting to, you're noticing you're not getting the same, the same level of productivity or just sharpness, just unplug your computer from the battery, from the charger. And then when it dies, you are done. That is the sign that you are done for the day. And that's, just let it be. Don't charge it. Tomorrow you'll deal with whatever's left.
That's really interesting. I have one of the newer MacBooks that runs on the Apple chip, which has like double the battery life. So I don't know how well, I think I could go like the whole workday.
Maybe but, have to actually, the whole workday, yeah.
I wanted to actually, you said something, I wanted to get both of your opinions on this. So we all seem like fairly productive, right? Like go-getting type of people. So, I'm still struggling with these different mechanisms I just shared. Have you found anything that's been really helpful to combat the So I have a difficulty, like when I know mentally that I have lower priority tasks that I'm pushing off until the morning, let's say, and I'm going to go like either spend time with my fiance or go see a friend or just like chill. I can't fully relax because in the back of my mind, it's so deeply rooted that I have something later that's an obligation or a stressor. So yeah, any thoughts? Yeah.
Go ahead, Erica, because I really don't have any. If you guys have a magic potion or a trick, please let me know. But it's a residue in me, and it impacts my sleep. And I've worked on it, and it gets better. But it's I'm not perfect. Yeah, I have no idea how to get that. Knowing I have all these tasks and like not letting it stress me out.
Yeah. So I will echo that. I'm also not perfect. I think that this is a constant struggle for all of us because, again, we are high achievers. So we want to get those tasks done immediately. What I can say that has been working for me more and more is just having that physical to-do list for literally the most minute details possible. So like even things as like respond to blank client's email. I have just started to write down as like micro details. Like before I was like macro tasks, like I need to do a quality assurance on this. I need to do this. I need to do that. But I've gotten to the point where there is a checkbox for did I do whatever client work I needed to get done? And then did I send it to the client? Right? Did I check in with them the next week? Like I'm starting to task at a more granular level, which takes me a little bit more time, but there is something to be said for what it's done for my mental health, because it transfers the stress from my head to the paper. And I'm able to then fall asleep knowing good and well that I'm not going to let anything fall through the cracks. And those are my priorities for the next day. Even though they are the, you know, like the lower priority things, it doesn't matter. I've already put them on my list. I'm not going to forget them because I am somebody who tends to get anxious, and I need to combat that with, you know, active mechanisms so that I'm not relying on just my brain to, you know, keep up with all this data. And then I'm going to beat myself up later if I forget one tiny little thing or if I feel like I dropped the ball just because I am that kind of level of perfectionist. So that's been what's been working well for me. But again, it might not work for well for everybody because how many people love to have physical to-do lists and keep up with them the way that I do or take them literally everywhere like I do. So I think it really depends. There's no magic answer. I'd love if any of our listeners out there are listening to this and you have tips or tricks for this particular topic, please send Jax, myself, and George a group message on LinkedIn. We would love to hear from you and we would love to share with the rest of the listeners.
Well, you guys, I just looked at the time and I know we can keep talking about this very topic for probably another hour to 2 hours, but we are definitely hitting the end of this episode. So I want, before we wrap up, George, I know our listeners are probably like, oh, we know how to reach George Tang, but please tell our listeners, how can they reach out to you? What is the best way for them to reach you? Email, LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn is just easiest, right? LinkedIn.com. I don't know what the URLs are, but my handle is just George Tang, first, last name. Pretty straightforward. Love to hear from you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Hackers and HackZen podcast with Erica, Jax, and John. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.